Ontario's rural communities and agri-food sector hold tremendous promise for driving economic growth for the entire province and all Ontarians. By distributing the economic development throughout the province with infrastructure investment in roads, bridges, schools, broadband, energy, and healthcare, we can create new jobs in thriving communities, ease the strain on big city issues of transportation and housing, and most importantly, we can secure a sustainable food system that every Ontarian depends on. A thriving rural economy can spearhead growth for the entire province. Find out more at producingprosperity.ca.
Well, good afternoon, folks, and thank you so much today for tuning into the Agriculture Show. It's a soggy, wet day, but we have hot, hot conversation today. And just delighted to have two guests. And I want to mention, as you can see on our Facebook Live video, Marcy has now taken over the official job of being video switcher, and she's all ready to take your questions and comments, and we will address them in about our fourth section. Good kid camera switcher. Let's just go back to that one there, and we'll introduce our guests today. From left to right, Stephanie Scott and Zing Zang C. And so with that, we're going to start off our show with our usual beginning of... we'll ask both our guests in sequence a song that he brought along and why they like it. And which one of you guys wants to go first? Do you want to talk about your songs first?
Go ahead, General.
Sure.
Okay, so I've got a bunch here, and you're very kind about four. We'll go to the singing ones, and there's A Frozen World and then two others.
Yeah.
And if you want to pick out which one I should do, I'd be delighted to click on it.
We can try the first one. It's the soundtrack of Bite of China.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. Bite of China is, I guess many people have heard of it. It's a very most popular documentary about local cuisines and also food culture in China. So this is a song that has been used in many episodes of the documentary, and I really like it because it reminds people of the environment and also the culture and people's activities in this environment, how people engage with local resources to create their unique cuisines. Yeah.
That's a true good taste, yeah. And tasty and healthy ingredients. Okay, that's great. All right, folks, we'll play it. Just stay locked in. We'll be right back with the Agriculture Show, and thanks for listening. It's episode 236. We'll talk to you in a short bit. Here we go. Thank you.
I'm Dave Piper from the North Dumfries Historical Preservation Society. What do I like about community radio? Well, I think it helps create an identity for the local community. And all communities have to have some and need some form of identity to appreciate what's going on around them.
Hi, I'm Tom Woodcock, planning ecologist at the Rare Charitable Research Reserve in Cambridge. Sound FM and the Agriculture Show are helping us promote responsible land management in the region of Waterloo and beyond. Please join us in supporting community radio, and together we can turn the map green.
And thanks for tuning in today, folks, to see our culture show. What a great song there that Xinjiang has provided with us, called the Bite of China, and it promotes healthy food and growing crops. Xinjiang, tell us about yourself. Do you call yourself a country boy or a city boy?
That's a complicated question, because I grew up in the countryside,
yes.
In a peasant's household. But in the past few decades, people might know that in China there has been a rapid urbanization process and also the expropriation of farmland in that process. So basically, my parents lost all their farmland in the past 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and they have been transforming from peasant farmers to entrepreneurs. And so I have seen that whole process, and growing up in this agriculture environment always make me, you know, wondering that what the agriculture will be like in the future, and will farmers continually farming like that? So I think our book provides some answers to that question. So
I'll be looking forward to talking more about that part of it. Does mom and dad still live in China? Where are all you and your siblings and the like?
Tell them about Henan Province.
Yeah, I'm from Henan Province.
Yes.
It's a most populous province in China, with more than 100 million population.
Oh my word!
It's in central China, located and about 900 kilometers south of Beijing. So it's a small city called Zhumadian in the southern part of the province, and traditionally it was an agriculture province because it produced most of the wheat in the country, and it's located in this vast plain in North China. So everywhere you go, you see, you know, vast area of wheat farms.
Wow. Yeah.
Not quite as big as the prairie farms.
No, but still pretty big in the scheme of things, I would think. Yeah. Well, that's good stuff. I usually ask guests too, just to get to know them a bit. Besides whether they think they're a country kid, I ask them, for instance, when you sit down to a family get-together, a celebration of some sort, how many people sit around your table? Have you been adopted by a Canadian family yet? How you doing for the holidays?
You mean when he sits down in China at a table?
That's fine. How many? What's a big one in China where everybody takes 3 weeks off of work?
Oh, you mean the festival?
Yeah.
The biggest festival is the Spring Festival.
And everybody goes home?
Yes, it's the Chinese New Year.
And how many people sit around that table in your house, if you can make it there?
Let me think. It's a lot. So we have, because it's like the biggest gathering for the whole family, so mm-hmm. we have my parents and my grandparents and also my aunts and their children, my niece.
Excellent.
Cousins and everyone. There's more than 20.
Oh my gosh.
We have a long holiday to celebrate the whole festival, and each day there will be specific kind of tasks for you to do. Like, for example, on the first day, people will get together and make dumplings and share the dumplings.
That's cool. There's a tradition.
Yeah, it's a tradition.
Oh, that's wonderful, eh?
Yeah.
In Canada, you might know some people like to go out and cut down Christmas trees for their Christmas stuff. But it's nice to have a tradition in your household is making dumplings.
It's a tradition in North China. I guess in South China, people also have their unique traditions. It varies from place to place.
Well, good. See, I'm glad I've asked that question. With that, let's get to know Stephanie. Stephanie, tell us what song you picked here, and then we'll come back and talk to you about what's happening with you these days.
Okay, sure. How about we do the Wee Banjo 3, Light in the Sky?
Oh, that guy there?
Yeah.
Okay. So, tell us about this song. Who the heck are these guys, and where did you see them, and why do you like them?
Sure. They're from Ireland, and I was at a Celtic Music concert near Peterborough in August this year. Mm-hmm. And they were, yeah, they were the feature band on the first night. And I heard that they're at the, at that point anyway, they were at the top of the charts for the bluegrass rankings with their new album. And just beautiful, beautiful music.
All right. You have their CD. How do you get this? It'll
I did buy the CD. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Let's play it and we'll come back and talk to some of our guests some more. And just thanks for listening to the Agricultural Show. It's episode 236. And we are live from our studios in the Old Boomer Box Factory warehouse on 2 Duke Street and right up. We'll see you shortly.
Take you back from the end. Wait, and the clouds are sure to part. There is a light in the sky. Open up your weary eyes. Follow the voices, hear the sound. Find your truth.
Hey guys, this is Danielle from Workplace Safety and Prevention Services, and this is CKMS Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7 on the Rogers Digital Network at 94.6 on the internet at radiowaterloo.ca and on Facebook Live Video. Catch the podcasts of past shows and visit our supporters webpage at radiowaterloo.ca. Community radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music. You're listening to The Agriculture Show. The Agriculture Show is supported by Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Agriculture Show is made possible by community radio. The WFA represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community and support the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmers with the policy needs of society.
Hello, this is the Tugboat of the Tugboat.ca. Community Radio CKMS is the voice of the people, by the people. I support CKMS 102.7 RadioWaterloo.ca because it's the real deal.
And thanks for tuning in today for the real deal, folks. It's going to be we have such great guests today and lots of really good music. We talked to Zing Zang and the great song he brought along. Now it's Stephanie. Stephanie, I'm going to ask you a question here. How about yourself? How many people sit around the Scott family Christmas dinner when you have Christmas dinner?
Yeah, we sometimes have around 20 people as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up in Victoria, B.C., mm-hmm. So we often had salmon dinner and lots of homegrown veggies, and sometimes my dad did moose hunting and venison, you know, get some deer as well, so we always had a huge freezer full of meat.
And how many of you are there, you and your siblings and perhaps all kinds of nieces and nephews now? How big of a crew is that you all sat down?
I got an 11-year-old, yeah, and we live here in Waterloo, but you know, my sister is, I have one sister, and then, yeah, the rest of my family's mostly still in Victoria, and yeah, my dad's side of the family. My mom came from a farming family in England and immigrated as a teacher.
My goodness, they met in B.C.?
They did, in Victoria.
Oh, my gosh. That's good stuff. How about your travel? You were in Kitchener-Waterloo, Waterloo region. You've been in the scene in this area for some time. I think I've seen your name in various capacities over the years. How did you end up in Kitchener-Waterloo?
It was the job that brought me here. Mm-hmm. But once I got here, I was pretty excited to kind of connect and realize there's such a strong local food community and people doing a lot of great work around food system development and supporting kind of rural urban kind of connections. So that's been very inspiring.
I asked Zing Zang if it was you thought yourself as a country girl or a city girl. What do you think?
I'm definitely kind of conscious of my mom's kind of family roots in farming, and we always had a garden. So definitely kind of connected to the land in that way, and just such a beautiful part of the world to come from and be part of. So.
What's your favorite vegetable you grow in your garden, or do you grow one?
Oh, I have recollections of enormous zucchinis. that was like the booby prize when we played card games together or something like that. I still have a garden, and we're growing rhubarb and raspberries and a whole variety of things.
Holy smokes. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Well, we're looking forward to our next segment coming up. We'll ask both of our guests about what is it that they do. We've got to get to know them a bit. I want to do one thing before we get too far along. I just want our listeners, as you see on our screen here, Marcia is here with helping us out today. I want to maybe want just a few words about yourself. What's new down with you guys as alternative journalists these days? You want to say a few words about, just give us a little update about what happened since you were last here.
Okay. It's nice to revive the food issue, bring that back to life. But what's happening right now in the office is we're organizing a lot of workshops, and the one that's coming up soonest is Walk Your Talk Moccasins. And we have a First Nations elder who's going to lead that. If you want to find more information about it, you go to ajmag.ca/mocktalk, MOCTALK. and that'll tell you all about it. But basically, there's going to be delicious traditional food, and you in advance will cut out the shape of your foot and bring that in, and the elder, her name is Christine, she will cut that out of the leather and bring it in a week later, and you'll learn how to make your own moccasins, and there'll be some really engaging discussion around that. So that's what we're pretty excited about there, and we're cooking up lots of other stuff, but I'll pass it back to you, Jeff.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to let Marcy be left out of the scheme of things. She has a voice to say, but I really appreciate her job today. She's manning the video board, and please, folks, don't be afraid to send in your questions or comments. We'll look at those in our fourth segment of the show, so fire away, type away, and send us a question, and you can listen to us on the FM band. You can find our video feed on Facebook, and it's The Agriculture Show by Jeff Steger. And check that out, and send your stuff our way. Okay, it's time for more music. Jin Jiang, what's the next song you would choose between, like, there's these three?
I think we can play The Frozen World by Emily Simon.
Okay.
It's a theme song from the documentary called The March of Penguins. You might have heard of that. I really like the documentary, and I feel like this song is about love between animals, but mm-hmm. it's also about the love of environment, and the show also bringing awareness of climate change.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good. Okay, folks, we're right back. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you in a short bit.
Wow. Hi, this is Greg Stewart. I'm from Mazek Seeds. This is CKMS Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7, on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, on the internet at radiowaterloo.ca, and on Facebook Live Video. Catch podcasts of past shows and visit our supporters page at radiowaterloo.ca. Community radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music. You are listening to The Agricultural Show. The Agricultural Show is supported by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Agricultural Show is made possible by community radio. The WFA represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the policy needs of society.
Hey, it's Steve Todd from Tavistock. You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS, Radio Waterloo at 102.7 FM.
Hi, you're listening to The Agricultural Show on Sound FM, 102.7, CKMS.
Okay, thanks for listening today for the Agriculture Show. Your host, Jeff Steger. Marcia is helping me doing the video switching. His hat's off to Marcia. You can watch us on Facebook Live Video. See our lovely guest beside me, Stephanie Scott. And beside her is Zhenzhong. See. And we've had a great time so far. We've got some great songs we've been playing. And we have to know a little bit about these two. And this part of the show is when I ask my guests, what is it you do? So, you know, we can talk about, you know, you have the world's best collection of strawberry jam, but I'm hoping we'll talk about the great book you guys have worked together on and a little bit about the university where you're working at. So
sure.
I'll ask Zhenzhong.
Yeah.
tell us what do you do? Are you, you're at the University of Waterloo and you've written a book.
Yeah. I was doing my PhD with Stephanie as my supervisor at University of Waterloo from the year 2010 to 2014. So this book is really about our research in that period, starting from actually earlier than that in 2009, about ecological agriculture sector and the whole the organic agriculture and organic movement going on in China. Currently, I'm a QES scholar, the Queen Elizabeth Scholar, working at Bosley School of International Affairs with the Hungry Cities Partnership. It's an international collaboration researching on food security and informal food sector in the global south.
Stephanie, can you add to that?
Sure. So, yeah, I've been at University of Waterloo for about 15 years now, doing a lot of research and teaching around food system sustainability themes. And I made my second trip to China. The first trip to China was in 1990 as an undergrad student, and then went back there in 2009 and learned about this burgeoning organic sector, and particularly the sort of the rising domestic market for organic food within China, and was really fascinated. And so put together a research grant and attracted three phenomenal PhD students to join me, and we all did field work in different periods of time, and they finished up in 2014, and we've been continuing with some more grad students working with me now, continuing on that research and just sort of telling the story of what's going on, because China gets a pretty bad rap around environmental issues and food issues, and so this is kind of a good news story to say, hey, there's actually something really positive going on. And so we're the subtitle of our book, so the title is Organic Food and Farming in China, Top Down and Bottom Up Ecological Initiatives.
Oh, who invented that title? That's a lovely title.
So what we're trying to show in the story we're telling is that there is a strong role for government at different levels, like especially local government within China, to be supporting developments of organic agriculture, but also kind of on the ground, the sort of grassroots initiatives of CSA farms, community supported agriculture farms. I don't know if listeners are familiar with that kind of model of people. Mm-hmm. You know, becoming a member of a farm and sort of paying the farmer up front at the beginning of a season and then getting sort of weekly deliveries of vegetables and other foods over the whole season. So that, I'm a member here in Waterloo Region of Fertile Ground CSA Farm. And so
yeah, that's a big, we should take a shout out to Angie. She's been on the show before.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, so that was really fascinating for me to sort of be in China and understanding what's going on with CSA farms over there and kind of comparing it to the experience that I've heard about in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know Teresa Shumilas. She's mm-hmm. also a co-author on the book with us, and she has a lot of experience in the organic sector in Canada. She was, I think, past president of Canadian Organic Growers and has been you know, going to a lot of the Guelph Organic.
See, we know the same people. Teresa was a guest too.
Yeah,
I saw him a few years ago.
So yeah, I'll looping back in. Yeah. So yeah, so it was. I mean, I think one of the really fascinating elements of this book was that we have four co-authors, and so two of them were Chinese PhD students, and then me and Teresa Shumilas, who decided to do a PhD and joined our team in 2010. And so having, again, two Canadians and two Chinese, and understanding what's going on with the food movement mm-hmm. and the organic food developments in Canada and China. And, you know, we spent sort of many, many hours kind of chatting about, you know, back to the land movement and what does it mean and what perspectives about peasants and hippies and organic food. And
I'm looking forward to finding out where these two worlds intersect.
Exactly, yeah.
That's really cool.
And so, yeah, so there are some parallels and there are a lot of differences, but it was quite a fascinating project.
In the framework of things, like, is it unusual that a University of Waterloo would have agriculture as part of its in it, so do all in your opinion mm-hmm. Ontario University, do they have all deal with agriculture at some point, do you think, now besides of course traditionally it's University of Guelph,
right? It's sure that's kind of the go-to what everyone thinks of in terms of agriculture research. You know, as a sort of a social researcher or social scientist, I'm at the Faculty of Environment at UW, and there are quite a few researchers doing food systems research about sustainable nutrition and kind of global food security mm-hmm. and, you know, what the FAO and the UN are doing around global food security issues and urban food security in cities around the world. So it's quite a cluster. And there's also a national organization of Canadian Association for Food Studies that I've been connected with. And actually, I just got back from Montreal at the Food Secure Canada Assembly with all kinds of kind of food movement people doing fantastic work across the country. It was not an academic conference. That's just for people, you know, wanting to create a healthy food system across the country.
And I'd love to have some of Xinjiang's fellow people at CG come out and talk about agriculture.
Yeah.
I've been tempted so many times to get a hold of somebody up there, but it's I get lost. So just when I think of it now, because I got to talk about what I think about.
Right.
You know, somebody would be a great guest in your circle there.
Yeah,
I'd be love to have them on. Agriculture. We love our agriculture.
Yeah. There are a lot of people researching about policy there. So we mm-hmm. have developed all kinds of interesting reports. So if you are interested, you can go to the website on hungrycities.net to just check all of these reports. Yeah, about our research findings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At CG.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the Hungry Cities project. And again, sort of thinking about kind of connections between rural and urban around food and agriculture and sustainable, healthy food.
I think I'm the luckiest guy in the world living in this area. There's lots of cool stuff going on. I just can't believe it. Great, interesting local. You can stop in and see some great lectures and interesting thing. Whatever your heart's desire, it's great. So
getting back to our book, we're also having a book launch on November 22nd. So if anyone wants to come out and meet the authors in person and try some dumplings that Jen Jung and I are going to prepare, there's an opportunity. We've got a Facebook page now about that book launch, and it'll be November 22nd on campus at UW in the Environment One building, room 221.
Okay.
At 11 a.m.
Do they have to go to Eventbrite or some location to book a spot in there?
Nope. We'll just overflow into the hallway if we don't fit into the room.
And if people do want to have a look at this book, how would they get a copy?
Ah, well, It's been out since September now, so I think there will be a copy at the university libraries. It would be great if someone would like to request that the local libraries buy a copy, and you can also buy it on Amazon. It's available through Routledge. It's a little pricey. I know they're pricing it for university libraries, but there's an ebook version that's maybe a little more affordable.
All right, good to hear. So when you guys have to go back to work today and talk about this book launch, what else besides dumplings are we going to have there?
At the book launch? Yeah, so let's get into it. So,
yeah, please.
So over the several years that we were doing this research together, we spoke to over 200 people, did a lot of interviews with people who were connected to the organic community or the organic sector around China. So that included visiting organic farms, talking to the farm owners and managers and workers on those farms. And I should say, I mean, our title is kind of also the subtitle of the book, ecological, not just sort of certified organic, because there's certified and uncertified, and there's other issues in China around other food standards, like something called green food and something called hazard-free food. So we were kind of looking at the broad spectrum of what we're considering kind of organic, ecological farms. And we also talked to people at organic farmers markets or ecological farmers markets. There's a really prominent one in Beijing and Shanghai as well. We talked to people from buying clubs. People in town here might be familiar with like Bailey's Local Food Buying Club. And so there were some parallel kind of initiatives in China that we connected with. Some people were renting plots and doing not quite a community garden, but renting plots on an organic farm and growing some vegetables for themselves. So we talked to people doing that. We talked to government officials, researchers, people at organic certification agencies, NGOs, etc. Just anyone and everyone who's kind of connected in some way to these developments. And we were trying to understand sort of what do organic farms kind of look like and who's growing the food, who's buying the food, how are they selling the food, what are kind of the channels. As you probably know, as I said, China has a pretty poor reputation around environment and food issues. There's been all kinds of food safety scandals.
That's just depends. Well, a question over that, but there's also there's some discussion about that generic term called factory farming and that kind of, which would paints a wide brush across countries like Brazil or the American Midwest with their large animal facilities. So I think there's enough gloom and doom going around for everybody. Everybody should have a little bit, I suppose, not just China.
You're right. No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But nevertheless, China does have some pretty stark statistics around, for example, I think the use of the synthetic fertilizers is four times the global average, per hectare or per unit of land. And for pesticides, it's the world's largest producer and exporter of pesticides, accounts for about half of the world's total consumption. So there are a lot of concerns for human health, for ecological health. The dose of chemicals on Chinese farms is about 2.5 times the world average. So they've had a lot to deal with. A lot of people getting affected, biodiversity, waterways, contaminated soils and waters. So everyday people have been very concerned about what they're eating and how to ensure better health for themselves. You want to say a little more about sort of the motivations, Jinzhong?
Yeah, I think food safety is really a key motivation for people to participate in all kinds of initiatives, because everyone wants to have access to safe and quality food.
That's right.
And it is a challenging issue in China for a while, especially after the year 2008 when the melamine milk scandal broke out.
I remember that.
Before the Olympic game in Beijing. People might know that. And because of that scandal and a series of scandals after that, so there has been people argue that there is a food safety risk in China, and China is becoming a risk society, and everyone is concerned about food safety. According to our survey, more than 72% of people concerned about food safety on a daily basis.
Right.
So it's really this motivation that drives people to to seek access to all kinds of safe food according to their own perception. For example, that people would like to buy food directly from farmers, and people also join all kinds of buying clubs to source food from CSA farms.
Yes.
And also the certified organic sector is booming after 2009 and 2010. So that's exactly when we started to do this research, and we've seen the whole process of, you know, this the proliferation of this whole sector after the year 2010.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good news story for people in China and for people around the world, to the extent that, like, China's environment can get cleaned up and people can access safer food.
The good initiatives. That there's all that paperwork in behind. Who certifies the organic status? That's a problem in our North American market. There's at least four different organizations that grant certification. Also, you mentioned some facts and figures about the use of pesticides, fertilizers. Like, where do you source that kind of stuff from? That's a tough one, though.
Well, China has a really big industry for that.
Yeah.
I
know from a producer perspective, the made in China herbicides, not too many patent ones, all the ones off patent, but the price is really great.
And so you were mentioning the price of certification.
Yeah, well, not too much the price, as much as the authenticity of the granting of an organic certificate.
Right.
There's some argument that you can, well, you give me $100, I'll just give you a certificate, right?
So. Yeah, and I think there have been some fraud in the past. China developed its own national organic standards in 2005, and then revised them and made them even more stringent in 2012.
That's great news.
It is and it isn't. So it's kind of reputed to have among the most stringent organic standards in the world now. And there were some companies that had been certifying in the past that were no longer able to because of concerns about fraud and their reputation. So that's been tightened up. The standards have become more stringent. Different from Canada, it's not just the process sort of on the farm that's certified, but the soil is tested and the products are tested for residues as well. So the food products itself are actually tested, because that doesn't happen in most countries for the certified.
Yeah, it's so stringent that every crop has to be tested. So for many farmers, if they are small scale, and they couldn't afford the cost for doing all these tests.
Yes.
So organic certification in China is really pricey compared to organic certification here in Canada. It's sometimes more than 10 times the cost. So it's really becoming less and less accessible for small producers.
That's a good problem. Yeah, that's a problem. It can be. Yeah.
For producers, and then the price that consumers pay as well. Like, here, I don't know, when people go to the grocery store or buy organic food from a farmer's market, they might pay 1.5 times, maybe 2 times as much as kind of conventional food. But in China, it's more like 3, 4, 5, or 10 times as much. Just phenomenal. I mean, and you can ask the question, well, why? You know, why is it that expensive? And I mean, sometimes you could also say that kind of the conventional food is kind of artificially cheap because of subsidies that exist for agrochemical use and for fertilizers and whatnot and transportation. So so we're probably paying more closer to the truer cost of food when we buy organic food, because the farmers are not getting the same level of subsidies. So that's one factor that to keep in mind. So the issue of kind of affordability for consumers is a big challenge. I think in Canada, if people really want to access organic food, they can often maybe have some kind of barter arrangement or volunteer on an organic farm or do something to be able to afford it, and if they really want to get it. But it's much harder. It's much more of a kind of an exclusive or elite kind of food. But then there is a big sector of uncertified organic food, where people are just kind of connecting with farmers themselves or connecting with relatives who live in the countryside and are growing, you know, food without chemicals and sort of sharing those with those relatives. So those kind of informal networks are really thriving. living.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Jen Jong can say a little bit too about the, kind of the role of cell phones and the internet in terms of facilitating those networks and people buying food.
Yeah. One thing we found really interesting from our research is the use of technology, mm-hmm. especially mobile phones, in making purchase and making payments, and also building customer base for all those farmers. Each farmer is developing their own websites, and they also have their page on the mobile phone app, so that customers can just order, place order, and also make payments through their phones. And they also communicate with all their members on mobile phones. So it's becoming really a widely adopted technology. It facilitates the trust, between the producers and consumers. Trust is really a big issue in China. It's everywhere. Every people we talk to mention the problem of lack of trust in China right now. So, and also, other than the mobile phone payment, we've also seen, all kinds of new technologies developed in the organic farming process, because people are bringing in all kinds of farming approaches from South Korea, from Taiwan, and from other countries, and they're learning from all kinds of farming techniques. And
so how does that work? Is it like a farm show, or like in North America and Europe, they have all jurisdictions have what's called a progress show or a farm show, and a multitude, it's like 2-day events, and everybody brings machinery, and they all walk around, and how does a Chinese farmer learn about all those other technologies from Korea and those other Japan?
This is an interesting question, because this speaks to the organization among all these farmers, and we found that in China there has been national organizations emerging since 2012, and a lot of farmers are getting together every year, like once every year. Actually, it's more early, before 2012. So everyone get together to have this national symposium. So people are sharing knowledge and techniques among themselves, and also they invite experts from, for example, soil scientists to talk about how to build up soil fertility in these events. And they have developed their own magazines, for example, and also mobile phone apps. They have their own public account to share knowledge and experiences. So it's kind of informal, but it's developing very rapidly. We've seen also some interesting organizations, NGOs, helping to promote many of these new farming ideas. For example, permaculture, it has been promoted among many of these community-supported agriculture farms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm always fascinated how the behind those things work. How does information flow around? Who's doing it and channeling it, and what's being told? And
there is a knowledge network.
Good.
Sharing
that's
of knowledge
good
is really
so
important.
Is there a Chinese College of Agriculture, or do all the universities in China have a small part that do that? How are the farmers trained? There must be beyond father to son stuff. There's always that. This is how you grow these crops, son. But how does the science of agriculture, who's developing that stuff? The universities or just the industry guys? I wonder. It's kind of a tough question, I know.
Yeah, the problem is not every university has the agriculture department, but we do have many agriculture universities in each province. And,
excellent.
And the problem is the agriculture program in agriculture universities is mainly focusing on conventional agriculture, like industrial agriculture, how to promote yield, for example, and using all kinds of seeds, new hybrid seeds development, and also development of chemicals. So agroecology, the whole concept of ecological farming is still a marginal topic in this curriculum of these agriculture universities. You want to say anything?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, so we can say that the agricultural universities are not doing a lot for training of people who want to be doing organic agriculture, but at the same time, there is a lot going on, just again in the conventional sector for average farms and farmers to try to curb pesticide use. So China's passed some laws recently to try to there's going to be no further expansion in the use of fertilizers and pesticides, because they recognize that it's really been overused in the past.
Mm-hmm,
and so they're bringing those
levels
down. So integrated pest management and different kinds of sustainable agriculture practices are, you know, being widely promoted now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So we're going to want to move on to our next bit of our show here, but Marcy, you've got some people posted some questions, and we can wait till that fourth section, or maybe you want to just cover one of these right now, and then we'll ask for a next song selection before we go into our third section of our show, which is What Do You Know About Agriculture? So thanks for listening so far, folks. Marcy, you want to just bring all these questions? We'll ask our guests their first impressions of it, or we can bring it back later. Let's do one question here.
One question?
Yeah, please, go ahead. What do you got there?
Okay. So, Jianzhong, you mentioned permaculture. What's the difference between permaculture and ecological farming?
Oh, it's a very technical question. I don't know if Stephanie have more information about that.
Well, I mean, it is a difficult question. I think permaculture, which as I said, was only emphasized by a few farmers that we encountered in China, tries to mimic, you know, natural rhythms of work with nature rather than against nature. So, for example, you could do companion planting or beneficial kind of, you know, insects that can, eat the insects that might otherwise kind of be a pest for some plants. There's a lot of different practices, and just even in the layout and the design of your farm, so that you're minimizing the need to to interrupt the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of use of perennial crops. So there's a lot of different practices. But I would say that in China, there's probably more diversity amongst farms that are calling themselves ecological than perhaps in Canada, where we have kind of more of a long tradition of what is organic agriculture, what does that look like, and following a common path. Whereas in China, there's influences from so many places, right, of traditional practices. Like there's a book that was published 100 years ago called Farmers of 40 Centuries. And so it looks at the traditional practices that have been used for a long, long time in China. So that's kind of one influence of just traditional practices. We visited farms where they were using traditional Chinese medicines as like veterinary assistance for raising livestock. You know, then there's influences from Japan, from Taiwan, from Thailand, from other places of traditions of sort of natural farming. There's a lot of use of ferments anaerobic digestion to sort of create, you know, as an alternative to composting, and then use that as a natural fertilizer on farms.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of diverse traditions.
Yeah, these are all kinds of different approaches for ecological farming. Permaculture is just one of them. There are also natural farming and also some other farming ideas brought up by or adopted by many of these farmers, that they are just experimenting on their farm. It has to be adapted to the local conditions. So it's really a hybrid approach of ecological farming.
Well, actually, I hope we could talk about that next section. I'm looking excited about that part. Where do these two worlds match up?
Hmm.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Another song?
Yeah. Whose turn is
I think
you
my
had
turn.
The last one. Your turn?
Yeah, did. We did the Frozen.
Okay.
One.
All right. So let's go up here. You got this Donovan guy, and then you got this Cormier at 7:24. So
yeah.
We've worked out a. Do you want to play this?
Let's do this one, and you can shut it off if it's a little too long.
Yeah, but, in the seven minutes, we'll probably cut that off a bit shorter. But tell us about this song, why you like him. Did you see him? Are you?
Yes. So I'm back to that Celtic music festival that I was at this summer. I was also introduced to these guys. So there was a big theme around Cape Breton Island and a lot of performers coming out from that part of the world. And so J.P. Cormier is a guitar player from there, and Tim Eadie's from Britain and Ireland. And so he came out as well. And they actually recorded this, I think, in 2010 together, but then they just released it this year as a CD. And again, just really love their music.
So you might, when I think about this song, it makes me think about things like square dancing or Kaylee type dance events. Are you a social dancer with this stuff? Are you a square dancer? Do some Kaylee?
I've been only a few times to some barn dances out at the Button Factory.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. All right, folks, we got lots more to go, and thanks for listening in so far. It's Agricultural episode number 236, and thanks for listening in. We'll let you warm up your coffee and listen to this great song. We'll be right back.
I want to take this opportunity to, seeing as he's sitting right here beside me, to indulge myself and play with him.
This is jazz musician, singer, and songwriter Tim Lewis. And you're listening to The Agricultural Show. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The WFA represents the farmer producers in the Waterloo region. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the policy needs of society.
I'm up. So, my name is Stephanie Scott. I'm at the University of Waterloo, and I live in Waterloo Region. This is CKMS, Radio Waterloo. We're live streaming on the FM band at 102.7, on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, and on the internet at radiowaterloo.ca, and on Facebook Live Video. Catch podcasts of past shows and visit our supporters page at radiowaterloo.ca. Community radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music. You're listening to The Agriculture Show. The Agriculture Show is supported by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Agriculture Show is made possible by community radio. The WFA represents farmer producers in the Waterloo region. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that's emblematic of the Waterloo region. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the policy needs of society.
Thanks, Steph. That was really good. I can hardly wait till we get to it. Do you want to try out this one, too?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Cool. Right ahead at your leisure and convenience.
Hello, I'm Jen Jones Lee from Osley School of International Affairs in Waterloo, Canada. This is CKMS, Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7, on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, on the internet at radiowaterloo.ca, and on Facebook Live Video. Catch podcasts of last shows and visit our supporters page at radiowaterloo.ca. Community radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music. You are listening to The Agriculture Show. The Agriculture Show is supported by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Agriculture Show is made possible by Community Radio. The WFA represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmers with the policy needs of society.
Oh, I love you guys. Thanks for doing that. That's just really super. You know, you'll be on here now for the next 2 years. I'm just going to play that all the time. It's just wonderful.
Legacy.
Yeah.
So once again, folks, we're just moving on. Just lovely in our show here, and just want to thank our two guests today, Steph and Zhang Zhang, and Marcy's helping out on the board here. We are at that part of the show where I would ask our guests, what do you know about agriculture? Now, it's quite a lot of overlap, but I'll throw that question out there. Maybe I could facilitated a bit by my own question is I'd like to know when the world of the agriculture and your what you're describing matches up with other types of agriculture. Is mm-hmm. is that a fair
like
question?
Like sort of parallels and differences?
When I look at it, I know there's a special group of farmers in Ontario, mm-hmm. and when appropriate, they use organic ecological techniques, and when appropriate, they use fertilizers and sprays.
Right.
And they're not wedded to one or the other, but there's this, it's a very high level, elegant level of skill. There's not too many people can do it, mm-hmm. but they have been able to match up crop rotations and techniques and the appropriate sprays and fertilizers to be better than either the other side of it. Is there a sense of something like that? I don't want to get used to myself yet, but go ahead. What do you know?
In China, you mean? So your question is about...
It's just a generality that I'm trying to get my head wrapped around. Mm-hmm. What message there is in this book?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, again, our book has a focus specifically on kind of organic and ecological farming, which, for the most part, is avoiding the use of synthetic mm-hmm. Additives or synthetic chemicals. However, as I was saying, China as a whole is making an effort across the whole agriculture sector to really reduce the use of chemicals and use sort of promote integrated pest management and no-till and lots of other practices that have perhaps been championed within the organic sector but can be applied more broadly. So we kind of recognize that there's, that we can sort of look at sustainable agriculture in a much broader spectrum across the whole kind of conventional and organic sectors. And they're both important, right? Because I think that if we could do something to shift, you can make a much bigger kind of environmental impact if you're looking at the whole sector of agriculture rather than just the sort of specialized few percent that are doing organic production at this point.
Yeah, there's lots of cool things that are being reinvented with organic agriculture that could be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's really necessary, given the scale of kind of ecological pressures that China's facing and the world is facing.
Mm-hmm. What else would you tell people about agriculture? Would you tell them that everything is fine and well, and or that there's progress being made? What else would you? Could you also first? I want to have some fun with this too. Would you agree that only brown eggs come from brown chickens? Go ahead.
That's my guess. But interestingly, when we had this conversation with Zhenzhong a while back, and some people in Canada may think that brown eggs are healthier or more natural. I mean, clearly, I don't think they are. But there's a preference in China for white eggs.
Yeah. There you go.
I don't know how this perception was created in the beginning, but people generally believe all those free-run eggs. That mm-hmm. when you buy eggs, you buy people start to buy free-run eggs, but all those free-run eggs are white eggs.
Right.
Yeah. That's
interesting.
Just an example.
Tidbit.
No, it's good because I think our urban listeners, connect with our with the concepts here through day to day things that they're familiar with.
That's
and
right.
That's why I was haphazardly and ham fistedly trying to do there. What would you tell a listener about agriculture from an agriculture 101 perspective? Someone who just said, "Oh, I'm interested in organic agriculture." What would you tell them?
Again, so you're speaking broadly speaking rather than China specific.
Well, here's the general. This is the great thing about this show is it could be whatever you'd like to talk about. So I just want to get you to speak.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, I have a background of being interested in the food system and sustainable food systems. You know, which is kind of the food and the consumption side of things as well as the production side of things. And I've been learning through connections that I've made locally in the Food System Roundtable of Waterloo Region. About what's going on here, and again, using that kind of as a comparison for the research that I was doing in China. Just another little pitch here for people mm-hmm. who want to kind of learn more and stay connected with some of these ideas and our research. We have a LinkedIn group for anyone on LinkedIn and wants to kind of join that group. It's called China's Changing Food System. So you can post questions and read kind of news and updates there. So that's something that we've been running and trying to have daily posts there of information.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, talking about agriculture in general, in China, that there's a big problem with agriculture sector is the shortage of labor and also the aging of the agriculture population. It's a very big problem for many of our interviewees, CSA farmers, and they face the challenge, a shortage of labor. And a lot of young people are migrating to cities and find jobs in the non-agriculture sector. So it's becoming a bigger and bigger problem, not only for farmers, but also being more and more realized by the government. So there has been policies in place in the past few years trying to encourage people to start a farm in the countryside. The government is thinking agriculture is a vehicle for achieving many of its sustainable development goals. So they want to encourage young people to go back to their homeland and to start their new ventures. Yeah, so it's becoming a problem, but there are coping strategies emerging.
Mm-hmm. You might have a great lesson for those of us in Canada, North America, because that exodus of young people, that happens in Canada all the time. It's hard. The population of farmers keeps going down.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to go there and milk some cows or something when you can go to town and get a good job at Google or something?
Yes. And it was
really
striking. I mean, when we were visiting different ecological farms in China and sort of asking the question, sort of, why are you doing this and what attracted you? And a lot of people had to face, you know, all kinds of pressure from their family that were saying to them, don't become a farmer, you know, that's the last thing that we desire for you. And just sensing that there's, you know, the opportunity or the status and everything, especially if people had some, you know, moved to the city and spent many years getting a university education, and then decided that they wanted to get into organic farming. And so, and that was a real pattern across across the sector, that it was often people who had an urban background and had high education, and they were the ones that were committed to make a change for themselves, for their families, for environmental concerns, you know. And so that's a big trend.
Yeah, not only people who have this agrarian dreams and values, but also people who has made a lot of money from other industries and sees organic agriculture as a new business opportunity. So they invest a lot of money in and build an organic farm. And in many cases, these farms are very high-end kind of farms for middle-class consumers. And, you know, so we've been to many of these farms, and they don't seem to have this deep understanding of organic values, but they are still becoming a major player in this organic sector.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because just today I was reading a paper about the travails of the Stronach family, and Belinda Stronach and her father are having a big fight. And in fact, that's what he did. He decided, I'm going to have this special breed of cattle, and I'm going to raise these chickens this way. And his daughter said, you shouldn't be doing that. But there's a man who's made millions of dollars.
Yep.
Right? And Magna International. And he went back and said, I'm going to be a farmer. That's sort of, it's my mind, that fits in with how you bring people back is wealthy people who want to rediscover or add something new. I mean, it can be a great experience to have this like unique food crop. Mm-hmm. People say, oh, you got the best yogurt. You've got the best. It's quite fun.
Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with like the geographical indication, right, of this kind of branding or labeling of food from that has a special like terroir, they're coming from a specific region. Pretty common in parts of, you know, France and Italy and whatnot with Parmesan cheese and champagne wine and all the rest, right? But
prosciutto, prosciutto ham is
all of that, and so that's kind of taken off across China as well as another.
Oh, good.
As another example,
well,
I think
that's a great idea.
Yeah, how people are really recognizing food quality. And it, you know, may or may not be organic, but it's you know, artisanal, and it comes from a place. And people, you know, we talked about the priorities of people around health and food safety, and maybe something that's kind of clean and environmentally friendly. But taste and is such a huge priority. People in China have so much, put such a high priority on food, on taste.
Yeah, many people say that they can taste the difference.
Right.
They say organic food or not certified organic food from CSA farms tastes different from food they bought from traditional food outlets.
Or food grown in a greenhouse versus grown outside in the sunshine, right?
Yeah.
So people are really concerned about these quality differences. Or buying fresh fish. Jen Zhong just got back from China last week, and he was telling me that his family had ordered crabs, right? They came from across the country, but it got like delivered live crabs.
Yeah.
Or people, we visited an organic farm earlier this year that was raising organic, it was carp, right? It was some kind of fish, and they do live deliveries, right? They'll package it up in the water and ship it off with their courier off across the country to people who, because they care so much about getting sort of live, high quality.
Yeah, and freshness as well.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's happening. You know what? That would be interesting. I wonder what, you know, what if in Canada we suffered a significant. I'm going to backtrack a bit. So let's say Europe. They had mad cow disease in England, and the public saw how badly it can go wrong so quick. And that has raised the consciousness of food higher in the European population than what has happened in North America.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, it's just a commodity here. Reverence.
We do have food safety scandals here, but it doesn't seem to faze people for very long, right? They may worry for a few days.
Oh, that's true. But it was really shocking to have, you know, huge piles of smoking carcasses.
Yes.
They had to slaughter all these cattle. Yes. It's really in your face.
Yeah, and I mean, China's experienced the avian influenza too, and recently another disease affecting a lot of pigs. So there have been, a lot of animals that have had to be culled, and again, it's pretty dramatic.
It would be pretty cool if most of the world took on a new appreciation for food and did follow the artisanal stuff. It'd be better for them and better for the environment and better for your soul.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest obstacles from the kind of policy perspective, like from many government folks that we spoke to, was there's such a priority on food security, on producing enough food for this population of 1.4 billion people.
Yeah. You can't mess with that. You can't mess with food security, for sure.
But I think that there's a lot of controversy about, you know, is if you transition to organic, are the yields going to go down? And it really depends on building the soil, right? If you talk to most organic farmers, it's not about avoiding chemicals. It's about building soil and having soil fertility that can be resilient and if the fertility is there, then you're going to be in a much better position to be able to weather storms, literally, and weather, you know, potential disease and whatnot, and getting away from kind of monoculture production to sort of build that resilience. So I think there's a lot of misnomers, I'm just saying, about the organic sector and about the potential, you know, yields if you're doing a good job of growing organically.
Yeah, good point. Well, I'm really interested in this stuff. I'm jumping in my own show too much. I prefer to let our guests speak a bit more. So, just one last thing you mentioned about so the good news is whatever you want in the way of food, it can be done. The technical issue is not an issue. It's what the price. How much are you willing to pay? So, you could do everything organic, but how would you? The price of food would double. How do you get the public to buy in on that?
Right. Well, I think that's a huge question, but a problem, I think, sort of broader kind of environmental problem we could highlight is that a lot of people say that we're not paying enough for our food right now because there's all kinds of externalities or basically kind of social and environmental kind of consequences, negative consequences of the way that our food system, food and agriculture system operates now, such that, you know, if we have, you were mentioning the confined animal kind of feeding operations earlier. You know, and there's huge amounts of manure that are not being, you know, composted or dealt with appropriately, that are, you know, causing runoff into waterways, causing the sort of fertilizer runoff in the Gulf of Mexico that's like causing a sort of dead zones. You know, these are huge prices that are not factored into the cost of food. So as I said, we need to, as a society, and globally, pay more for food so that we don't have those externalities, so that we, and so it requires kind of a really major shift.
Kate, want anything? Otherwise, we're going to play a song. We kind of got into a lot of talking there. Who's next for the song, sir?
Yeah. Well,
you want to have a look at these? Oh, all right. Let me get this up here. Which one of these do you like here?
Let me check.
Okay, let me just try to bring that around there. I know you can't read from the angle.
We can play this one?
Okay. You're a handy guy. You know how to make that scratch better. Okay, tell us about this song and why you like it.
It's called 平凡之路 in Chinese. It means ordinary road.
Okay.
It's composed and performed by a popular Chinese country singer called Pu Shu.
Okay.
The song is really about a reflection of one's life, you know, after all those sufferings, all those experiences, and to see everything people sometimes they shouldn't take that seriously of what happened, so just take it easy.
I just thought something. Are you a musician by chance? Have you?
No, I'm not.
He's a good karaoke singer.
Karaoke singer, yeah.
It's funny, people like to pick up instruments. I used to play keyboards when I was like a kid. Kind of wish I would have kept it up. Do you have the same experience? Were you maybe trained in some musical instrument when you're younger, exposed to? And
I wish, but I never had this chance, yeah. Probably in the future.
Well, to go around the table, how about yourself? Did you ever play music? Are you a musician by chance?
My son's learning fiddle, so I bought an instrument to follow along with him, but I don't pick it up very often.
Okay. Marcy, what about you? Are you a budding bass fiddle guitar player?
I did take guitar lessons when I was younger, but all of that's gone except for the ability to read music. I play CDs really well.
Okay, with that, folks, we'll play a song. We'll come back, and just thanks for listening today. We've got great guests, great stories. We'll see you in a short bit. Here we go.
Tell me. 心想你想他想那野草野花，绝望着渴望着也哭也笑的平凡着。我曾经跨过山和大海，也穿过人山人海，我曾经问遍整个世界，从来没得到答案。我不过想你想他想那野草野花，
this is Amy Beth Brubaker from Elmira. You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7, or on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, or on the internet at soundfm.ca. Community Radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music. You are listening to The Agriculture Show. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The WFA represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the policy needs of society.
I'm Owen Roberts from the GMOs. You are listening to Community Radio, CKMS, Radio Waterloo. We are live streaming on the FM band at 102.7, or on the Rogers Digital Network at 946, or on the internet at soundfm.ca. Community Radio broadcasts and promotes local news and entertainment through the spoken word and music.
And we're having a great time today, folks. It's a cold, kind of, well, not cold day, but wet day, and we've got some hot stuff going on today, so I'm glad you chose to listen in. I want to thank Marcy for coming out there and doing this, soundboard with us, and Zhenzhang and Stephanie are in studio here talking about just a quick review. You know, we find out that everybody has Christmas traditions, and I understand dumplings will show up again in the past and in the near future, because dumplings are going to be presented at the Brook
Launch. Yes.
And then we went on to talk a bit about what they're doing, and oh my gosh, you guys, you're busy. I've spent a lot of work putting together a book about agriculture in China that talks more about those topics of organic and certified and community-shared agriculture, those type of models, and how that works in China.
Top down and bottom up.
There you go. That's it. I knew it. That's why we pay you a big bucks, so I can remember this stuff. My goodness. And then just we had a little yak in there about, you know, what should people know about agriculture, and it just went on, and even your host got going. I tell you, I got to be quiet. I want to have my guests say everything. So
can we talk more about the bottom up?
The short answer is yes. So this is what this part of the show is. Topics that didn't get covered or we want to talk about, it's the time we're going to bring it back. And I think even, Marcy, did you want to do something off of the Facebook there? Do you have that looked after? You had a Facebook question? It looks like obviously looked after it.
No, I looked after it.
Okay, so okay. I'm gonna.
Oh yes,
go on Facebook Live video. Agriculture Show. You see the comments there, and it's been looked after. Yeah, put that on there about the book launch and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, what's the date of that again?
November 22nd, 11 a.m.
And how can they find out more?
There's a Facebook page. We can give you the link later, so you can post it there. Or look at, I don't know if we're going to put in our Twitter feed and all of our links.
We'll put something together.
Or look me up at UW and email me. Yeah.
There you go. Okay. Most of our listeners are probably pretty good at computers. They can probably find this, get some names and what's going on, and it'll eventually you drill down to this stuff. Hey, you guys, let's do this section. I want to bring it up to you again there. What did we not talk about that you think is important for our listeners? And I invite you to just start separately or whatever. Just whoever wants to start, go right ahead and talk to us about what's not been said that should be said.
Yeah, we briefly mentioned just now about the social organization behind this organic and ecological agriculture development. So we just want to highlight that the development of the sector is really connected closely to a national movement for promoting rural development, sustainable rural development. So it's this organization called New Rural Reconstruction Movement. So they have been working since the 2000s across China to promote sustainable agriculture and also to revitalize rural culture and also enrich people's life in the countryside. So ecological agriculture has been one of their top priority. They have started one of the first CSA, community-supported agriculture farms in Beijing, and they have also been the main host of this national CSA conference annually. So we have in our book, we have one chapter, chapter 9, talking about their roles in this whole organic ecological agriculture movement in China, and also the challenges they face from the government and what have they been doing to cope with these challenges. So yeah, if you're interested, you can look at the book in chapter 9. Yeah,
I'm glad you added that. So this is part of how to revitalize the countryside as well as provide food. Getting organized to do this new idea for food. Mm-hmm. Also, one of the benefits is a whole bunch of people get under one umbrella, get organized, get messages coming in on one information stream, get on the same book and have their... Yeah,
I should say another interesting kind of contrast that we found with organic farms in Canada versus China was the role of agritourism. So there's a lot of opportunities for people to visit organic farms as tourists. You know, sometimes it's a homestay overnight, or there's U-pick operations, and you can like go home with some eggs or some grapes or some strawberries or what have you. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of interest, and that's and as you were just saying, Jeff, sort of the rural development opportunities, the rural economic development opportunities to build in the connection between agritourism and organic farms is really widespread and widely promoted in China. So
yeah, because you got to get your goods to market and have people come and visit you. That means looking at places
added.
People stay and transportation and adequate telecommunication, internet,
that's right.
That type of
or
thing.
Or setting up,
that's a pretty good idea,
restaurants on the farm and all the rest. Hmm. So that's a big trend
bed
in China.
Bed and breakfast and things.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you think about the rate of urbanization and the number of people now, like over half the country in China, living in often really big cities. They really crave the opportunity to get out of the city and have some fresher air and have a place for kids to sort of see the chickens and hear the crickets and, you know, get a rural experience.
Yeah, and also given the fact that the urbanization really happened recently from the 1990s, so a lot of these people living in cities, they grew up on farms. They have this connection with agriculture.
Yeah.
There's this nostalgia going on among Chinese urban residents. So that a lot of people have this strong desire to actually reconnect with land and agriculture. And so tourism is really a big thing around big cities.
Yeah. I really cool you mentioned that because it comes to mind we have less and less each year people have a connection with a farm. At one time, my dad's still out there. And they say, I had an uncle. Yeah. And I say, I think my grandparents were. And each generation that goes past that, there's less of that connection to. And I don't know if it comes back or not, but I'm glad to hear that that's still a part of the experience of living in China.
Wonderful.
And there's also a slow food movement in China. People may have heard about that here, and it's not just about kind of gourmet food and high end restaurants, but like the piece of music that we heard first that Zhenzhou put up that comes from this series of shows called The Bite of China, and people can find them on YouTube with English subtitles. They're just so beautiful, celebrating these artisanal kind of food traditions across the country that have largely been, again, marginalized or forgotten about, you know, as we move towards more and more processed foods and packaged foods. And so it's really interesting to see that celebration and recognition. Mm-hmm. And as Zhenzhong said, like as people kind of see take an interest in this and sort of see these shows, then they go out and try to, and it's actually been, again, another economic development opportunity for people who've set up these whole network of stores, you know, of restaurants, you know, with these, talk about the noodles, for example.
Yeah, right? Yeah, a lot of the traditional ways of producing food is becoming popular through this kind of TV series. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah.
You need to set up your own like supply chain that supplies all these really interesting kitchen utensils.
Hmm. Yeah.
So you can, there's more than one way to make a dumpling. If you have this special device and do it this way, right, you can...
Oh, it's all by hand.
Okay.
Then even the wrapping, I guess. If you're really hardcore, you'll even make the own the dumpling wrappers rather than buying those pre-made in the store.
Yeah. That's the definition of slow food, isn't it? I mean, the ceremony, the meaning, the effort.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Culture and the time and the relationships, right, of just doing it together with other people.
Hmm. Maybe Tim Hortons will try to save themselves by creating an afternoon coffee ceremony. Is that possible?
Oh, I can't tell you. Yeah, I was in Guangdong province in South China last August for a week visiting a lot of farms, and I can't tell you how much time we spent drinking tea and just watching. But it's not like... just like, how do you make tea? Oh, you just sort of get some tea and add some water. It's like, no, there's so much more than that. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, you're doing it around a whole group of people, and there's this, you know, you're pouring the water in and you're serving it and you're filling it up, and got these tiny cups, and you're just having a little sip and a little taste and then serving it again and again and again. And sometimes we would sit around for 6 or 8 hours having all kinds of conversations and just enjoying.
That sounds pretty cool,
eh? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So, yeah, this so much appreciation of food as culture mm-hmm. is a really, really mm-hmm. key piece of, mm-hmm. of appreciating where your food comes from.
Mm. Well, I hope from your book that then people will get an idea of the capacity here and how it might unfold, and resolving issues around ecological versus permaculture and all those odd definitions that they're appropriate, but just how to line it up in one's head to... I think my vote for slow food concepts, I believe that appreciation of food is probably the most important thing rather than the actual growing of it. That's been my 2 cents.
Right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, the other piece that I wanted to say a bit more about was about... you know, why is this important? And so we've kind of highlighted the sort of cultural and social and economic side of things. And we can think about, you know, some people talk about agroecology, which is kind of another, there's all this different language, right? Ecological agriculture. But agroecology is a kind of a growing international movement, but also a science and also a practice. And so it's interesting to sort of think about all those different dimensions and how they all kind of come together to offer solutions for, you know, our food system, but also our economic, our economy, our society, and our environment. And so there's a lot of different ways that I think we in Canada can pay more attention to and promote this. As I said, I just got back from the Food Secure Canada Assembly in Montreal, and recognizing that there's going to be a new federal election in a year's time, organizations like Food Secure Canada, like Sustain Ontario, and probably the local food system roundtable in Waterloo Region are going to be getting on board to try to get more Canadians engaged in thinking about agroecology and food and agriculture. And so I'd really encourage people who are interested to connect with these organizations and spread the word, and because I think Canadians do care deeply about all these different dimensions that can make a huge difference across society and across the world for more sustainable development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also want to mention that in our fieldwork in China, we found that Chinese farmers, they are all very interested in learning more about the situation in Canada. So they ask us all kinds of questions about Canadian agriculture and what farmers in Canada are dealing with all these challenges. So I think in the future, it's not only the knowledge that we can learn from for Canadians to learn from China, but also the Chinese, they're also very interested in learning more about the Canadian agriculture sector. And opportunities.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's the obvious thing that we don't, otherwise we would not have thought about it, but I'm glad you had re-spoke that.
Yes. But I think that there's also a lot of problems with agriculture in North America, with the extent of, you know, farmer debt and the hollowing out of the countryside as people are moving out of agriculture, and there's more and more consolidation and mergers. And a lot of people around the world, including in China, kind of look to North America as like the solution and the model of what agriculture should look like in future. And again, the more I've talked to people in North America who are involved in that sector, would challenge that and caution, say there's a lot more problems. And yet what China's doing, especially with the government support for the most part, we've talked about the fact that they are supporting the organic sector to some extent, but for the most part, it's a steamroller of agricultural modernization and developing larger farms and vertical integration and wiping out of the small guys and no respect or interest in their traditional knowledge. There was a story in the New York Times just a couple weeks ago that featured the story of an organic farm just outside Beijing that we visited several times called Green Cow. And it's a CSA farm, and they have a little cafe as well connected to their farm. And they have a lot of heritage breeds of animals, of chickens, of pigs, that they've like traveled far and wide around the countryside to try to acquire and preserve these heritage breeds of animals. And yet the local government has been pestering them recently in their efforts to wipe out small-scale livestock because it's perceived as, you know, a hazard to the environment, and that they needs to be consolidated into larger scale farms and larger scale agriculture, livestock raising. And so she's had to slaughter a lot of these animals or hide them or find some way to sort of export these last, you know, four heritage pigs to a farmer that she met in New York who would like to raise them and salvage this breed. And so it's a really sad story because there isn't a lot of appreciation of the need for preserving biodiversity, preserving small-scale farms, preserving artisanal traditions.
Yeah, and also the circulation of on-farm circulation, because if they are not allowed to raise animals, then it will be difficult for them to recycle the animal manure for the soil fertility.
No, that's true. There's some an integrated approach to agriculture is by far the best. And, you know, nowadays you have to count for everything. I've seen farm expansions stop for the just because they can't prove they can get rid of their waste. And everything else is right. Natural gas, roads, everything's just right. But if they can't, the law now is, as a farmer, you must, you are responsible for your organic waste, manure, whatever.
Yeah. But it's not typically used as an input for soil fertility, right? People are biofertilizer.
Well, for sure. I would be better off to use cow manure than to buy stuff.
To sort of promote that circular economy and keep it local.
It's just money. I mean, you don't buy fertilizer if you got your own cow manure. It's crazy, right? I mean, you have to balance.
But I guess the problem being that more and more people are moving away from that kind of mixed farms where you do have space to sort of...
It's about half and half. Like the guys... Okay, the guys who are presently livestock farmers, then they're doing it. But the guys who are just cash cropping, they don't have that part for the organic material to get back. Not the same. They do, but not to the power or the degree that livestock guys. So, you know, half the farms in Ontario could do a better job of if they could get cow manure or some kind of manure waste product.
You know? Right.
So actually, funny you mention that. My goodness, it's easy to throw around these terms, but the detail, the nuance and the detail is important. It's really, you know, it's you know, suppose sort of the thing that all university people are eggheads. Well, that's not right. It's not fair.
Brown or white?
Yeah, there you go. So, as you know, in agriculture, the same thing. It's really awkward to have these titles, and it, without describing this actual what's actually going on, it's a problem, right?
Yeah, but I don't want us to get lost in all of these different details, but I think broadly kind of we've been speaking about the need to sort of re-envision our environment and better connect to the land and better, you know, if you have a... if you're able to sort of be more in touch with how things are going on your farm, how fertile the soil is, how the animals are doing, you can be more in touch, and I think those kind of things about getting building more reconnections with eaters and feeders, as Teresa Shumilas likes to say, rather than kind of using this kind of language of like producer, which just kind of suggests that sort of distance, and you know, you're just growing a product, you're just growing a commodity, rather than nourishing people. So I think those are the kind of relationships that we need to sort of think about reconnecting and rebuilding and recognizing.
Okay, let's play a song. You got Donovan here and the best of Jethro Tull. It's your turn next year, right?
Oh, I like them both, but let's go with Jethro Tull.
Okay, so classic old time band, my goodness. Did you ever see them guys?
I don't think I did, but I just have recollections of, the mixtape era.
Did you try to go click and start another one?
No, when people, I was in high school, and like we would make tapes for each other. Okay. So, yeah.
That was my first concert.
Was it?
My cousin.
Nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
How about yourself? Remember your first concert you went to with friends and saw something?
The first concert, I don't think I have been to a concert.
Gotta change that.
I should, yeah.
All right, let's listen to Jethro Tull, and we'll come back to do our wrap up for our show here. We're just moving along quite smartly at 1:50 afternoon, and let's play the song. We're right back. Thanks for listening in. Thank you.
I'm Bob Jonkman, Green Party candidate for Kitchener-Conestoga. I don't always listen to community radio, but when I do, I listen to Sound FM, 100.3 FM.
Okay, thanks for listening in today, folks. We're having just too much fun for a Tuesday afternoon. Just want to thank our guests here. So we have a tradition when we wrap up our show here to ask our guests a final get-to-know-you kind of question. I want to ask our guests, would you tell us, please, what are you doing in the next 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 years, two months, 20 years if you want to go that
far? How long have you got? Oh, my goodness.
Still turn up in 2 hours. What are you doing in the next 2 hours?
What am I doing in the next 2 hours? I gotta go and update my to-do list because I've been getting a little overwhelmed lately with all kinds of things. But I'm prepping to teach a class tomorrow about sustainable food systems in China.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'm gonna prepare for my guest lecture at Teresa Shimela's class this evening.
Oh, good.
So it will be about the research I've been doing with Hungry Cities Partnership. So. That would be my
food security themes.
About food security and small food vendors. Yeah.
And in the next two weeks?
2 days. Not so fast. 2 days.
Not so fast.
The next 2 days.
What are we doing the next 2 days? Well, one of the things that Jen Zhong and I are going to put our heads together on, because he just returned from China, and we're putting together a research grant that's due next week. And so we're going to talk about that. Do you want to say a little more?
It's the research grant is about the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and how all those development goals are connected in one way or another with the ecological agriculture sector. So we want to propose more research on how the development of ecological agriculture is addressing many of these challenges and also help to achieve some of the Sustainable Development Goals. Yeah.
And I would say that grant is really emphasizing the building of partnerships and networks, because we're not just kind of academics that just sort of stay in our ivory towers, but we're really about, you know, building this kind of network and movement across the country in China and kind of networks internationally. And so we're interested in how, you know, what are the messages that, you know, local governments and can take away around agroecology and sustainable development? What are the messages for researchers? What are the messages for, you know, people connecting with, farmers and their CSA members, for example? Mm-hmm. So how do we kind of spread the word?
So we want to move beyond academic and actually incorporates other actors in our research and in our advocacy.
Do you ever work on environmental goods and services? Does that ring a bell with you guys?
Yes, I mean, I don't think there's like payments for ecosystem services as such, although I know some people who are kind of looking into that.
The Europeans do that.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with like the ALICE project here in Ontario as well.
That's our best local example.
Yeah.
Okay, the next 2 weeks, where are you guys? What do you do next 2 weeks?
Next 2 weeks. Well, so we'll submit that grant next week. I'll continue teaching this course on sustainable food systems. Next week we're going to talk about urban food systems, and we're talking about about street
GMOs.
GMOs. We're talking about street food. We're talking about sort of the use of social media to connect people with their farmers.
Yeah.
And then our book launch. Make some dumplings.
When will GMOs migrate to the CRISPR arguments? GMOs is last year's issue, last century's issues, right?
Yeah, nanotechnology and all the gene guns and everything.
Okay, so,
Yeah, I mean, China has, for the most part, sort of stayed away from GMOs in food. They've been doing it with cotton.
Papaya.
But papaya is an exception. Uh-huh. And there's, a lot of debate there as well as here.
Mm-hmm. So in 2 weeks you're going to have the book launch.
Yes.
All right. What about in 2 months? What's happening in 2 months?
Oh, let me see. I'll finish teaching the class. We're going to do a road trip. I think we've been invited to give some talks in Ottawa about our book.
Okay.
So folks out there can stay tuned. What else? We're planning a conference in China for next term. It's not till April, but we'll be doing more prep for that.
Well, that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Very nice.
So, yeah, doing some more field trips as well.
And in 2 years, are you going to come out with organic farming China version 2?
We would love to have a paperback because it's not in paperback right now.
Okay.
So I think our publisher will put it out in paperback after they sell all the hard copies, all the expensive hardcover copies that they can. But we'd love to do more. And I supervise a lot of students as well. I've got about eight grad students, so I'm hoping that they'll be kind of moving along in the pipeline in the next months and years as well, and I'll attract some new good ones and keep the cycle moving.
Yeah, good stuff. Mm-hmm. And 20 years?
20 years.
You guys would have been shocked there. What happened?
Yeah.
Agroecology will be widely accepted.
Yeah. It's really working with more and more people with different backgrounds to promote the concept of sustainable agriculture in general, and also to facilitate this movement. You know, always integrating all kinds of players in the field.
Getting everybody on board and excited.
That's good thinking. Yeah, there's lots to be learned for sure. Okay. Holy smokes, you guys. This has been just a hoot. Just a real hoot. 158. Goodness. Okay, folks. First of all, thanks so much for being guests.
Lovely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate the invitation.
And don't forget, folks, you come up to the book launch. And Marcy, thanks for doing what you're doing. And last things, folks, I'd like to finish our show with the story of if you eat this week, thank a farmer. But if you're a farmer, thank a consumer. True?
Yeah.
Two ways.
Eaters.
Yes. We'll see you in 6 days and 22 hours. Take care. Bye for now.